This episode of We Are Libertarians is brought to you by Audible.com. Enjoy one free audiobook courtesy of We Are Libertarians. Choose from more than 100,000 audiobook titles, including works by Ron Paul, Walter Block, Murray Rothbard, and the Cato Institute. Audible.com also has audio of radio and TV programs and audio versions of magazines and newspapers. You can get the Audible app on any mobile device or download the audio to your computer. Go to audibletrial.com/WAL or head to WeAreLibertarians.com and find the link to get one free month of Audible today. Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this week. I am Chris Spangle. To my right is Greg Lenz.
Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm doing well. To your right is Dan Peffers.
How are you all doing?
To my far left is Chris Peffers.
I am here.
And to my left, the reigning queen of We Are Libertarians has returned. It is Gina Martinez.
Good evening, good evening.
Our prodigal child.
That's aww. Right. She may go away, but she'll always come back.
Did y'all pick a pack of peppers for my return?
You did.
No, but we do have pizza coming.
Excellent. Maybe they picked a peck
of peppers.
Of pickled pecker peppers.
Yes.
Okay, now I see what you were doing. So, welcome.
She just handed me the mic and said, respond. So, here I am.
It's like please. A rap battle in Detroit in the shelter.
Gina's our executive producer. She just goes, respond. You, how are you doing?
Yes.
That's right. So, welcome to all those who are returning. Welcome to all those who are listening. We want to say thank you. We do this as a hobby, and we don't get paid for it. Lord knows it costs us money. It costs Greg...
It doesn't cost me any money.
It doesn't cost you any money.
It doesn't cost me any money.
It costs me a lot of money, and it costs Greg a large pizza from Jack's Pizza tonight. So,
and I've been buying all of my meals at the restaurants I've been pimping.
That's right. And so we want to thank you for all the notes that you guys have sent in. So we get paid in compliments, and you guys have made us moderately wealthy this past couple months.
We're so very vain.
We really do appreciate all the nice notes that you've sent in, and we really do appreciate all the letters that you've sent in asking questions. A couple of them are going to center around this episode. So if you have questions for us, if you don't know exactly what to think about an issue, don't worry, we'll tell you. So
we're spontaneous order.
That's right. We're the libertarian central planners. So write in if you've got questions about the philosophy, about an issue, whatever it may be. Send us a note at spangle@wearelibertarians.com. Go to the Facebook page, hit us up there. You can also go to the website wearelibertarians.com and hit the contact page. We love getting the notes, hearing that you're out there, that you're actually listening and answering your questions. But before we get to those other topics, I want to talk about Obamacare a little bit first. So we'll go a little bit out of order here. The president made an announcement today that he's going to relax some of the regulations so that if you lost your health care plan, you will be able to keep your health care plan now. He's going to make good on his promise.
For a year.
For 1 year. So, hey, you're a businessman, Greg. Don't businessmen, they love more than anything uncertainty. First, you can keep your plan if you like your plan, then you couldn't keep your plan if you don't like your plan. Now you can keep your plan if you like your plan for 1 year, and then you don't get to keep your plan if you don't like your plan.
You know, budgeting and forecasting are overrated. You don't really need those things.
That's right.
They're irrelevant.
It's all speculation anyway,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, right? They're just
right.
Words on paper.
You greedy bastard. So it really is. It doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever that they're delaying this for 1 year, considering that they're just going to, you're going to lose your plan in a year anyway.
So what exactly is he doing? He's delaying the whole thing?
It's a 1 year delay to keep the high premium catastrophic. No, like, so let's say your plan you have right now doesn't meet the minimum guidelines of what's mandated. You can keep it for this year.
Okay,
the problem is a million got canceled. A million of the, or maybe even 5 million. Some estimates were 5 million. I'm not sure that's right, but
so just some big number of people lost their insurance,
canceled. But guess what? It's back.
I need to do the obligatory. Need to do the obligatory. Anybody else see that this coincides with the 2014 election?
Yeah, that's really what this is about. Most of the Senate Democrats and many of the House Democrats started losing their mind, saying that they were going to get killed, rightfully so, in next year's general election. So now they're going to have all this stuff coming out, you know, right after the election. Oh, I lost my plan again. But the vote will be over by then, and they're betting that hopefully there's enough good stuff coming out of Obamacare that people want to keep it. But
that assumes you can go to the website and enroll.
And actually enroll. And in the first month, what was that, 109,000?
105,186 people.
Right. So roughly the size of a medium Facebook page. So, like, it really is so insane to me.
Or 1/8 the size of Indianapolis.
Right.
But, I mean, the thing that sucks is all these people are getting ready to go and get on the exchanges. They end up, I mean, because that doesn't even count the people who decided to drop coverage. That's just the people who canceled their coverage.
Right.
So if you were anticipating being able to get on the exchange, I bet that's another 4 or 5 million people.
Right.
It's a travesty. And then of the new people, 360-some-odd thousand new Medicaid enrollees, because that'll save us money.
Oh, right.
Of course. And then on top of that, the of those new enrollees, of the 100,000, only 30,000, one-third, even qualified for the smallest subsidy.
Yeah, and what people are finding, they go into the exchange if they can get through their really terrible plans. You know, the deductible is incredibly high. And I had one friend who said, you know, if we just took the penalty and opened a savings account, and we took the penalty of $2,000... we still would probably have better insurance than what we've got now. So what we have through the Obamacare exchange is the best plan we can find. The deductible is so high that we essentially do not have any kind of health insurance unless there's a major catastrophe. And this is a fairly young family, so what are the likelihood that they're going to have a major catastrophe? And they are learning the hard way as a young family that their wealth is being shifted to the older and sicker folks in our society through the force of government. Whereas they had a choice. They could have chosen not to take insurance. They could have taken they could have kept the plan that they had. Instead, they're being forced into a really bad plan.
Yeah, well, I mean, it has to be a real market without a floor, so each individual family or individual person can find the plan that suits their need. No one's needs are the same.
Yeah. I mean, my needs are much, much different than Peffer's. I need a pizza. I need a TV. Peffer's, what do you need?
I need a steak and I need a TV. So that's one thing different.
One thing different.
And glaucoma,
that's kind
of a sample
of glaucoma medicine.
I need the internet.
Yeah, and the internet. I don't use the internet.
The interwebs?
No.
No, even though, he's got cable TV, ladies and gentlemen.
Even though I run a thriving podcast internet, I hate the internet.
This is really more talk radio.
Yeah, exactly right.
Which
this
is right up your
of
alley.
Our approach.
That's right.
Home. My brother and I, we just Netflix it and Hulu Plus and Crackle and iTunes and stuff.
I have Hulu
like that.
Plus and Netflix as well, but we typically just DVR. And you know what the crazy part is? We really kind of only watch the network primetime shows, so we could probably just get an antenna and TiVo.
That is a travesty.
I know.
That is an absolute
There's
travesty.
So much television that's not those shows.
That's good.
Yeah. True.
There's so much television that's good.
Well, like Key and Peele. I like...
or Breaking Bad.
Impractical Jokers. Breaking Bad. Rest in Peace.
Hardcore Pawn.
No.
Pawn Stars.
Leave.
Are there shows about Pawn Stars?
Exceptional. Pickers.
Pickers, American Pickers, great. I will give you that.
I'm sorry.
No, American
show,
Pickers,
no.
They always pay the price the guy wants them to pay.
No.
They're always like, how much are you looking to get?
For it's not about the price.
$2,500.
It's the fact that those two are the biggest goofuses I've ever met in my life.
Yeah, they are. Those two.
They are the two most... They're the dorkiest people I've ever seen
in
my life.
I couldn't get into
dorky.
I couldn't get into
queer. That's what Spangle's trying to say.
Stop that. what do they do in that truck driving around?
Are we just
around?
Throwing words around now?
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
I think it's funny that they've got a Mercedes-Benz van, creepy white van.
I know. They get in the van and they're like, yeah, we really blah, blah, blah. Yeah. It's like, really? You're annoying. I'm turning the channel.
Have you ever seen an impression before?
Shut up. I felt that was spot on. I mean,
my comment was spot on if you would have seen yourself.
So Gina's researching Obamacare right now on the laptop. Do you have anything to say, Gina?
Here at We Are Libertarians, we do our research for the show during the show.
She doesn't have much.
pencils down.
No, this is how I get my news. It's just listening to Spangle introduce all the topics.
That's right.
Oh, I better this have an opinion show. About this.
Yeah. I better make something up quick.
Well, that's
actually,
what I've been doing my whole life.
I received an email today from the White House that was pointing out some of the economic gains that they had made this month, and I was trying to access that, but for whatever reason, the computer won't let me log in. So I went to the White House directly to look for the graphs that I had seen earlier.
The economic gains from as far as lowering premium or like lowering monthly premiums for people?
It wasn't regarding the health care. It was regarding the economy.
Oh, yeah. The economy's picking up. Yeah. It's picking up.
Yeah.
How Lots dare of quantitative you. Easing will do that every time.
Yeah. So this...
Picking up for whom?
The Wall Street.
Always it's, with the pickers. That would be a pickers. Who.
My grocery bill is getting progressively more expensive.
Why?
Because everything's scarcer. Because our money's not worth as much, and we've got third world countries that are coming to prominence that are able to outbid us on goods.
Yeah, the world's scary.
I just figured you had a tapeworm or something, so I was just checking.
Well, do I look like the kind of guy with a tapeworm?
Yeah, you do, actually.
Really?
With that beard and that unkempt mustache. And
that's usually worse. People with tapeworms
what
are
kind
a
of tapeworms?
Thinner.
I don't think you know what a tapeworm does.
I know. I really don't. I'm an uneducated
person. Apparently, he thinks that tapeworms help you grow facial hair.
Yeah.
Which might be why he doesn't have any,
would
because
drink,
he doesn't know how facial hair works.
Would you drink river water, and you're just living out by the White River Creek, or whatever it is?
The White River Creek.
Oh, come on. I live under an overpass.
That's right. That beard is to keep you warm. Bearded Peffers, do you find Greg's attempt at a beard offensive?
I do not, because it looks like some real thick early growth, and just make sure you keep it even looking, okay. And it should look nice and trim, and you know.
I feel it's offensive.
It'll grow into a respectable beard.
Hey, that's the pizza.
Yeah. It looks like you're putting some work into it, you know.
Yeah, he's trying to make it look good.
Spangle just often forgets that a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step.
Let's see it grown out before you can pass judgment.
I'm just saying, I can't grow a beard at all. All these people are doing Movember, and like Gina could probably grow a better mustache than I could.
Fact.
Yeah, so...
The thing about Movember is I feel like it's a month for people to grow facial hair who feel very replaceable at work.
Why?
Because they're afraid, you know, if they grow a beard, that they'll just get replaced at work.
Why? Are bearded men highly unemployable?
Bearded people
Kappus.
Are...
And that was not a shot.
Kappus was going to make me shave my beard before I had to go work for whatever he's doing.
Why don't you serve me a few pieces of pizza, Greg? Yeah, why don't you make sure it's on a plate, and I want a napkin, too. And I...
Just shovel it in his mouth.
Yeah, Gina, what are you doing around here?
Not making sandwiches, that's for sure.
Yeah.
We need more mics, Spangle.
I know. I only have 4 mics, but I will be rectifying that soon.
What operation is this?
I've got an SM58. You know, you could have told me to bring it over.
You know what? I do have another mic sitting down here. I should dig that up. So, tell you what, let's take a little bit of a pause, enjoy some pizza, and then we'll come back with 5... Count them, 5 microphones.
Intermission.
That's right. All right. So this is...
This is the most disorganized podcast episode we've done in a while.
That's all right.
You know what? You didn't see Nearly Total Nonsense, though.
Yeah, these people...
That was pretty...
If this disorganization offends you, you get this shit for free.
Yeah.
So...
We talked about 4-year-old video
games. Mark down
the
your
time,
Spangle.
Yeah. All right. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back from our lunch break. You know, every podcast needs a lunch break. You know, right in the middle, you get kind of hungry, and your pizza shows up, and you make one of the co-hosts buy you pizza.
It's so hard to go the whole hour and a half without pizza.
It's truly. I mean, I can't go an hour and a half without eating.
Well, it was better than getting a breaking and entering charge since I entered your apartment, and you and Mrs. Spangle were not around.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, at the beginning of evening, my wife and I took the trash out together, and because I'm not going to do it by myself, and we I got Dan on that one. So we're walking back, and I see Greg walking in, and I usually just leave the door unlocked for everybody to walk right in. And Greg comes in, and he just, it looks totally confused. He's like halfway through the apartment. He's like, the hell is everybody? And I go, really, it's kind of rude to walk into somebody's apartment when they're not home. And Greg was like, I'm so sorry.
Well, I felt like it was like left, have you ever read those Left Behind books, like the Baptist Apocalypse Rapture books? Like, right. That's what I was afraid
I thought
happened.
You were going to reference no yourself as clothes. Liam Neeson and
no,
Taken.
No, no.
No, I got to go find them now.
Yeah.
No, but I that's the least I could do after breaking and entering, so.
All right, cool. So let's get on to one of our first questions. This comes from Matt. And Matt writes, hey, I'm a big fan of the podcast. You guys are hilarious and fun to listen to, especially Greg Lenz.
Thanks, Mom.
Yeah.
Really?
I'm starting to doubt the
sincerity.
Like
after the last few weeks, fan mail to Greg Lenz has started to trickle in, and I'm doubting it.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you write that, Greg?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't actually. I paid for it to be written. I didn't so much as write it as I
bought
it.
So that's how you can still do the commentary and your own fan mail.
It was voluntary, to my credit.
So you had your assistant in Bengal write that for you.
I deployed a team of Indians, if you will. I am my own jobs program over in Bangalore.
Deploy is a good word for that, too.
Bangalore, Maine? Mm-hmm. Okay. I was wondering if you could
found some Indians there.
I was wondering if you could do a show or devote some time to discussing religion. No.
Wait a
all right,
minute.
So, moving on. No.
The Leadership Institute taught me when you're being asked a question by a reporter, always answer the question you wish you were asked. So just always wish that you were asked yes or no questions, and you've got the answer
that's
to every
right
question.
This has been a Liberty Minute with Daniel Peffers.
Hell yeah.
Thank God, because Liberty's winning at the moment.
While I am interested in your personal thoughts on theology, it would probably make the most sense to discuss religion and the philosophy of libertarianism. Are the two compatible? Specifically, what are your thoughts on Islam and libertarianism? Oh, should we even let Greg talk?
Yes.
If they are not compatible, will that keep the liberty movement from growing if Islam grows? So, do we want to start with Islam and libertarianism, or do we want to start with our personal theologies?
Does anyone know a ton about Islam here?
I know a decent amount.
I haven't.
Greg knows all the bad stuff.
Koran.
Not true. I know the good stuff.
I know a little bit. I mean, we went to school in Plainfield. It's home to the ISNA Society. It's the International. It's the Islamic North
American Muslim Association.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And I wrote a paper on Islam in the seventh grade.
Oh. Let me clarify it. Okay, 98% of
this
Plainfield
whole group is
was white.
Full of credentials.
The
98% of Plainfield High School was white. The other 2% was Muslim. So we have a lot of Muslim friends, and you know we went to school during 9/11. So
I
want to
make
questions.
Sure everyone knows and is aware that we're five white people about to talk about Muslims.
There are white Muslims. That's kind of racist.
All right, but we're like white in the cultural sense.
I mean, think
we're
about Jokar and
we are
Tamerlan
Protestant raised, you know.
Right, you're saying we're WASPs.
Yeah, kind of.
Like, this is a room full of Methodists.
Yeah.
No, sir, but yes.
Yeah.
Not Methodists.
No. So do we want to start with Islam, or do we want to move on to our personal theologies and how we view that with our political philosophies? Where do you guys want to start?
I'm good with either. I like both of the topics.
Well, you got to have an opinion. This is an opinion show, Greg.
It's true.
Personal? Opinion. All right.
I refuse to have an opinion because I'm an anarchist.
Okay.
Well, what the hell does that mean?
Anarchists are full of opinions.
That's right. That's all you do is share your
opinions. I'm breaking the mold of anarchy.
I'm going to be the anarchist that people like.
Have you seen my stapler?
I'm going to be the one.
So you want to lead us off, Peppers?
No, not really.
Okay.
You don't talk about your religion?
It's kind of a divisive issue, you know?
So is being an anarchist.
Nah.
You don't think there should be any government at all? What are you afraid people are going to not like you?
No, it tends to be a divisive issue, and people are very emotional about about their particular beliefs, and honestly, I feel it's better just to let people have them.
Okay.
You'll abstain, if you will.
I will abstain.
Listen, just because I have an opinion on religion, it doesn't mean that you have to have the same opinion. It doesn't mean that if right. I share my opinion, that that means that that's the one that you ought to have. I think that's part of the problem, is you should be able to feel free to say whatever you want, and if somebody gets offended by that, then they're the idiot, not you.
Yeah, it just...
It doesn't have to be an idiot, but that's where the misunderstanding
is. No. I mean, it's about coalition building.
Idiot,
it's,
boom. Declared.
I mean, when it comes to religion, you know, a lot of the divisiveness about it is very artificial, and why would I want to introduce an artificial source of divisiveness when I could build coalitions?
I hate your beard, by the way. No.
I don't think you're getting anything out of
it. Just
him.
On a side note. That's okay. You don't have to talk about it. You're just not coming back as a co-host.
See, that's not forced either, so he's not in violation of the NIP.
Right. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding, Peffers. No. All right, so let's go to Greg Lenz. Greg?
I most identify with, like, deism, in that I believe sort of there is a grand watchmaker, if you will, not necessarily in the human form, but there was something that started something somewhere, and that's how we're here. And I don't believe that our God is, or what I call God, is providential and involved in human affairs whatsoever. But I'm aware of the infinite regress argument and all the atheist arguments. But for me, logically, I definitely see that we're here for a reason. I think it's more than likely natural law. I tend to identify with that we can discover the way we should live through reason.
Okay. And I am an evangelical Christian. I go to the Methodist Church. I am, I believe in the Bible, I guess I'd say literally, I believe that it's possible that Jonah was inside of the whale.
Do you believe in 7-day creation story?
I am not a young earther. I don't believe that, like, the earth is like 6,000 years old. I'm not Pat Robertson. Obviously, he's a libertarian and a Christian. I don't necessarily, I say live and let live, you know? I think that the Christian church cares way too much about people's privates and not enough about, you know,
poverty
and some of the social issues. I really, really like the new Pope, and Sarah Palin thinks the Pope is too liberal. So maybe that's, I guess, I would fall it more in with him than Sarah Palin. But
Sarah Palin's kind of a contrarian indicator on what you should be thinking.
Right. Exactly right. I was an atheist, and I just was not interested in religion whatsoever, and just thought that it was all bull honky. And, I just remember thinking how stupid it was when I went to see Billy Graham in 1996 when he came to Indianapolis. And after 9/11 really shook a lot of my foundations and got me on a questioning path, and I test drove Buddhism there for a little while after reading Hermann Hesse's Siddhartha, and did, you know, a couple years of just research into various religions, and after a lot of time of studying, Christianity was the only one that really made sense to me, and it became deeply personal in many, many ways. So it wasn't just a mental exercise, there was also other aspects to it. So 9/11 really was the catalyst for, you know, spurring me to start taking a look, and that maybe there's something bigger, which is weird because it's like an evil act, and you go, well, this is just evil and all this, and it was actually a spiritual event for me. So that's sort of my path and where I'm at. You know, I try not to be one of those Christians who are real pushy, but all of you will be leaving with a track today, so...
And not a tip.
Yeah, no tip. Gina Bear.
I believe in God, but my relationship with God is between me and God, and the fewer people that are involved in that, the better.
Daniel defense.
People tend to f*** things up.
It's a good rifle.
The Peck of Peppers is doing right now. I'm sorry, who interrupted your discussion, or who interrupted his discussion?
People have interruptions in their discussions all the time on this show. It's like 80% of it.
Try
is
to
it?
Keep up.
Yeah.
Oh. Hmm. Well, listen.
You got peppers and stereo
this isn't
here.
Story time.
As the Christian in the room, I'd like to bring peace to this discussion and invite Gina to continue on.
He brings not the cross.
He'd also
but the
like
sword.
To lord over us.
That's right. Shut up, peppers.
Thank you, darling.
Righteousness.
So yeah, no, I think that Spangles should be able to do Spangles' thing, and Greg should be able to do Greg's thing, and Peppers doesn't even know what his thing is.
Well, I know what my thing is.
Well, you should be able to do that, and I shouldn't have the ability to force you to share with me what that is, because I don't give a fuck about your relationship with God. It's my relationship with God, and you have no business in my
relationship. You are very confrontational. Well, I mean,
because what did you say? What did you say at the beginning
of
this?
You could say that about,
no, I'm curious. What did you say at the beginning of this? People's opinions regarding religion tend to get very, so you
divisive.
You acknowledged that it can be divisive and that people can become heated about such a discussion. And you're right. Lots and lots and lots of people can. So
that's why I'm being targeted.
Are you being targeted?
Yeah, you're looking right at me.
I think it's really more the beard. She's not a fan of the beard.
No, I am a big fan of beards. I have a lot of beloved beards.
I will not make a joke right now.
You should.
No.
You're not equipped to.
No. I don't want to make jokes about beards. I don't want people to start examining Samantha.
I think some people need... I think some people need a group element to declare their relationship with God or to define their relationship with God. I think some people need a dogma. I think some people need a book or a piece of, you know, material evidence that helps lead them to a relationship with God. But I don't think everybody does. And I think that the people, I think that a lot of us have common ground. And so once you get past the labels and the us versus them, you tend to get more of a positive result where religion is concerned.
The Gnostics always believed that your faith or your religion was discovered through within. So it was that direct relationship with God, and it had absolutely no effect on your environment or what other people believed, that you could only come to what you believed through knowing God and building that relationship. Does that sort of sound similar?
Yeah, it sounds like a valid point of view, yeah. It would jive with my personal...
Thank God Constantine kicked him out.
That's right. CPEF?
Well, I think like religion itself, it's kind of like government, you know, on a local level. It's really just a bunch of people who want to throw each other barbecues and help out when times are tough. But once you get to like these big mega churches and mega governments, you know, it's kind of just bloated and no one really knows what they're trying to do. So like religion on a grand scale, I kind of have a problem with.
I love the Methodist Church, but I will say that the general conference every 4 years is as annoying and as frustrating to watch as Congress, and it really is just sort of a stupid system.
Yeah, and they're always making these random, like, they're having these council rulings and all these technicalities in the religion.
Right.
And you're like, this is a sin, this is, yeah. There's just like, it's like having a stock board, you know, good versus bad, and they're always switching back and forth.
But what do you believe?
I guess I believe in God. Maybe more of a deist, but I think if God exists, I think it'd be more like a science-y, hippie God, just like another part of the universe.
So he'd be a lot like you.
Like, I think...
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Is that you think,
yeah,
God is...
I think so. I think I was made in his image, yeah. No, just kind of like a...
It's
something
magic
that's,
plant told him.
Something that's like trying to push order in the universe.
Are you
I think
saying
I do
your brother
that.
Burns bushes?
I'm not saying that.
Sorry, Peppers.
What?
Moses? And then...
Christopher's so off guard right
Jesus.
Now.
No. If you're looking for a substitute teacher, by the way, you can please find ChristopherPeppers at Facebook.com.
I will not teach your kids anything crazy, I promise.
Oh, yeah.
So you're more just agnostic. There may be something, maybe not.
I mean, if gun to my head, I would say it makes more sense to me that there is something out there than not.
Right.
I would say I more believe in God than do not believe in God. It's just kind of like this push for universal order. You know, maybe like some sort of consciousness that's just trying to...
So how does this all kind of fit in with libertarianism? I mean...
I don't think the two exclude each other at all, really.
Yeah, I would say that people, anarchists in the libertarian movement are the loudest. Agreed, Dan Peppers?
Agreed.
Yeah, and so...
Well, Maya's not here, but that would be...
Again, with the Maya. We love Maya.
Right.
She's just loud.
You know...
You ever notice that she's always twice as loud as everybody else on the episodes?
I, I ride the board as much as I can. But I would say that anarchists in our movement tend to be the most dominant voices, and they have the most philosophically pure and consistent point of view.
Because we're awesome.
That's right. And they tend to be, based on anecdotal evidence, young men who are very smart, very well educated, and love no government at all. They are generally anarchists, or they're generally atheists, and they love Austrian economics. And if you are not an anarchist, not an atheist, or don't adhere to to Austrian economics, and you fail one of those three litmus tests for a lot of them, then you're in trouble. And I think that there's more than just those absolutes in the libertarian movement. I don't think you have to be an atheist. I don't think that godlessness or libertinism, either one of those, independently.
Don't knock libertinism.
I'm not comparing godlessness and libertinism. I'm saying that those two thoughts, people from the outside the movement think, oh, well, they're just godless heathens, or they're all atheist, or they want to do is smoke pot and have sex and orgies, which 80%. I mean, right, guys?
I mean, are you saying that's
all they want to do?
Right.
But they got shit they have to do.
Are you saying that you don't?
Gun to my head. Just saying. but there are many, many evangelical Christian libertarians. There are Muslim libertarians. There are Jewish libertarians. There are many libertarians of faith. And they're sort of the silent, I don't want to say majority, but, you know, they're...
But they're bigger in numbers than the rest of them.
No, I'm not saying that it's a majority, because I can't say that for sure. I don't know at all, but I'm saying
that...
We
don't even know what Peffers believes.
I know, because... He's a godless atheist.
He's a fascinating under his mystery. Beard.
Yeah. Do you have a golden calf in your living room?
Like, yeah, we're Baal worshippers.
Yeah, we worship Baal, yeah.
No,
were you
he
team
had a golden
Sarah
calf.
Or team Hagar? What? That's all I want to know. Go Old Testament.
So if you worship Baal, what?
So I'm constricted to an Abrahamic religion?
You might be.
See, maybe he's a Hermann Hesse Siddharthan.
He could be.
He likes the Buddha. Maybe he believes in Vishnu.
Yeah.
Buddhism wasn't like a religion.
It's more of a philosophy.
There's no like God to worship in Buddhism.
Right. It's more of a moral code, and it gets lumped in with. It's not a deistic religion, if that's a word.
Maybe I am Shinto
a
non-deistic or
religion. I like that.
So
Shinto's really neat. Have you ever studied it?
A little bit.
It's really cool.
What is
I tipped
it?
My hand there,
they
didn't
have, like,
I?
Temples and they it's
well I knew that about Shinto. I knew what you see in cartoons.
Oh, you are.
Did you?
You are. Your life is in danger.
They
right
also.
Now. You have no idea.
Yeah, I remember seeing those.
Do you know what they
in
teach
Bugs Bunny
in
cartoon.
Beginning religion and at IUPUI?
No.
Well, you should read a book.
Okay.
All right. So let Gina talk, everybody. Let Gina talk.
The Shinto religion is very cool, and the traditions that they, respect, are ones that. We don't here in America, but there's some very neat coming of age gestures that they celebrate, and the ways that they pray is cool too. They like bring a gift or an offering to whatever spirit they're asking to protect them or watch over them for the time to come, and the celebrations are amazing. Like, we've got Mardi Gras here in one city, which is a great celebration before the Lent begins. And there they do festivals seasonally that have to do with their Shinto beliefs. It's actually very cool.
Everyone should go to Mardi Gras once.
And raff their asses off.
Yeah, so...
Raff?
Yes, raff.
What is raff?
That's Japanese laughing.
Oh, I got
see,
you.
That's the Jeez. One. Gina does not
Daniel's
like the,
not up on his stereotypes.
She doesn't he like should. Racial yeah, jokes, but that's the one that will get Gina every time.
I guess.
See, I don't think it's really enough. A racial joke so much as a reference to a commonly
vernacular.
A commonly mispronounced
word. You can reference
word.
Race if you're referencing it like someone's hair color. And that's kind of the same sort
the
of thing.
The Don Imus approach, nappy-headed hose.
No, not like that. That's not how I mean. I mean, you call someone Japanese like you would call a blonde person blonde.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. So it's a physical identifier.
Well, that's actually it's actually identifying like what their nationality is.
This isn't,
and I don't think that
physical,
I don't think that nationality
like
and race are the same thing.
This
it's
is
about
a conversation that's dangerously close to a conversation.
No, it's
yeah.
about the
slurs.
Accent. You can
Regardless.
Make fun of like how an accent
oh, wow.
sounds.
That's a great point. So let's bring it back. Let's get back to libertarianism. Let me talk about Christianity and libertarianism.
I think we are one peppers too heavy in here. I think we shouldn't have five microphones.
I think we're one Gina too heavy.
Yeah, you were the one that crashed the party, Gina.
Am I? By
we
showing
were having
up. Are you guys co-hosts?
You were late.
I'm sorry. Are
I was
you guys
introduced
executive
as a
producers?
Co-host.
That's right. I've been here in the last
Gina
month
is
or so.
An executive producer.
Right.
All right, so let me come back exactly. to Christianity and libertarianism.
Check yourselves.
Those are the producers that don't do anything.
Stop it Aww. Now.
They're the producers that show up and wreck everything.
Now stop oh, being mean to
I've
Gina.
I've had like 5 minutes.
All right. Everybody done?
Probably.
All right.
Yeah, I'm done.
Don't throw the mic and leave, please.
Praise be to Allah.
No, the game's about to start, so I can't leave.
All right. So, everybody?
2 minute countdown.
And go. So, libertarianism and Christianity, I think, are exclusive. You know, libertarians place a heavy emphasis on peace, and so do Christians. I think that, you know, most religions promote taking care of your community. And they give a tremendous religious communities give a tremendous amount back to their communities at large. And that is definitely something that libertarianism promotes. You have to take care of your community. I don't think that the mutual aid societies all have to be religiously based, but there is definitely an emphasis in all religions that giving back to your community is significant and is an important value. That's something that religious people and libertarians share.
Evangelization, evangelizing is a problem.
Okay.
Because it's outreach is one of the central tenets.
Right.
So spreading the message. That in a voluntary society could pose quite the issue.
If you go to accept someone's help and they give you a 5-minute spiel on Jesus or
yeah,
whatever
no
religion,
problem.
Guess what?
That's no problem. But I mean, being uninvited and. For essentially Jehovah's Witnesses and those types that show up on my doorstep, and I just...
But
they're
what,
so friendly, I can't
at least
be mean,
they,
but like, God, you're just an inconvenience.
All you gotta do is say no and close the
Have
door.
Have a nice day,
don't
or
move
don't...
On.
But at least they introduce
Naked,
themselves,
Robin
and they
Williams.
Aren't like...
They're always
NSA
well-behaved, they're
tapping on your phone.
Yeah.
Or anything crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know, it, I think, yeah, they
it's,
take
it's
no
It's really
for an
annoying when people
well,
knock on your door. Can't they just tap your phone and read your emails like a
right.
decent
yeah.
society?
Exactly.
But I've got nothing to hide.
And they represent themselves.
Let's talk about Islam and how it relates to libertarianism. You know, I think it's tough for us to talk about Islam because we live in a society, especially in the last 10 years, where a religion has been propagandized. And
yeah,
some truths are kind of lost in the translation.
I'm not really sure what all I've heard is real and what all isn't.
Which is why we've actually... If you're Muslim and you listen to this podcast and you want to call in sometime and correct us and talk
yes.
about what you believe, that'd be awesome. Because
knowledge is power. Send us your power.
so you,
all right, Siler,
you
have studied libertarianism a little bit. Can you talk about how libertarianism and Islam would work together in a society?
Islam, without the eschatology implications. Like for Christians, revelations, right? They believe the world, granted it's very metaphorical and it's not clearly cut. Not everyone believes that's word for word what's going to happen. But Islam has the same type of scenario. Eschatology is how the world ends. And in Christianity, it doesn't necessarily involve a Christian state arising. Where Islam runs into issues is that a very fundamentalist, well, the whole religion believes the world ends with a caliphate and that it's peace on earth. It is the redemption of the world. Islam means submission, and then we all are living harmoniously through God's law, through Allah. The problem is certain sects of Islam believe they can bring it about faster. That's why you get the wars we're fighting today and the incredible hostility in the Middle East. In Christianity, that's not the issue. They describe what they believe happens with the horned beast coming out of the ocean.
There are definitely people who want us to like go into Israel and cause all these wars because
that's bring
the
chosen
the
people and who has the most rightful claim to Israel. It has nothing
well,
to do with
But there are people who want to start a war there simply to bring on the apocalypse. I have met and had discussions with people while I'm in church. So
that's Islam.
Like, I'm just saying, Christianity does have that same thing. They have people trying to violently start the apocalypse.
Right, but are those people adhering to the true gospel, the true understanding of it? And
oh, there aren't any true Scotsmen.
And like, frankly, it's sort of arrogant to say that you think that man can cause the apocalypse and man can start some chain of events that will actually bring about something
initiated by God. I feel like there's
about
the same amount of that arrogance on both sides of this, though.
The thing is, they have essentially scholarly validation. Whereas within Christianity, the people who believe those types of things are the equivalent of the KKK. They are the people who are excommunicated.
Well,
clean that up, because what kind you of- just, hold on, you just phrased that, it sounded like you said every Christian is a KKK member.
No, they are a radical sect of individuals who misinterpret existing understanding of biblical scripture.
But like, what is the stuff that says that in Islam that is not the radical sect?
Those are the Hadiths. There's called they're Muhammad's interpretations. There's the Quran, then another part of the work is the Hadith. These are the words that Muhammad spoke, and that have been, they're able to trace. There's an entire Islamic scholars trace how authentic a quote is based on how many other people cited it at that time, and then it branches out. And then the more times that it's cited, sort of like a Google search, the more times something's cited, the more valid it's considered. And so there's Hadith, there's the scripture, the Quran, and then there's also historical implications and historical understandings.
Okay, well, so who are these scholars, though? Because, like, I've met a lot of Muslims
within the church.
Because, like, I've met a handful of Muslims, and they've never, like, the ones I've actually met face to face have never.
Sure, you meet, and this is like, of Islam, it's maybe 5%.
I guess I don't see how, if it's maybe 5%, how they're the ones with the scholarly backing.
How they are?
Yeah.
Because it's politically important. Like, in America, it would be like if John Hagee was a senior senator from the state of Georgia.
Okay, well, this sounds more like a problem with Middle Eastern governments than Islam itself.
It absolutely is, but in the long-term implication is this. In Islam, even if you're like one of your friends who's a Muslim, at the end of times, it will be under an Islamic global government, a state called the Caliphate, that the Mahdi, Jesus Christ comes back, Isa, he comes back. The Mahdi is who leads the charge to establish peace on earth, or submission to Islam. There's false, just like in Revelations, there's a false leader, he's blah, 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 there's a big war, happens in Damascus, that's why Syria was so important. But in Christianity, it's not political or a governance issue. It is the war of the Antichrist versus the Christians. It is not a war of the state.
Okay. Like, but it seems like they're trying to establish, like, this Christian state. That was always the impression I got.
Who is?
Like, just whoever's fighting against the Antichrist.
Well, no. I would say that there's definitely an element of, like, the David Barton crowd, where, and the Pat Robertson folks, where they want to use government to force their values on society. I mean, conservatism, the entire founding of conservatism is essentially that to have a functional society, to have a good government, you have to have good community standards, and that what is good for the community is good for society at large. And so the base of conservatism is that you are centrally planning an outcome based on your religious beliefs. And that is the antithesis of libertarianism. So anyone who says that, you know, we should do this because the Bible says this, that's unlibertarian of you, because the whole point of libertarianism is that government is force and we don't initiate force. If you believe in libertarianism, you do not believe in using the government to manipulate people to see your way or to do things that you think are good or bad. So,
and realistically, neither do Christians. They don't see, like, it's gotten bastardized, no doubt, but Christians, one of their tenets isn't to establish a state that enforces values. That was never Christ's message.
Right. As a Christian, you know, my personal values and my personal principles, it is more inward. It's about becoming a better person. It's about adhering and obeying Christ. And what does any of that have to do with anyone who is sitting in this room? Okay? It has nothing to do with anything that you're doing. It has everything to do with my own choice. So I choose my behavior. I'm responsible for my actions. And if I sit here and I steal from Greg and I take money out of his wallet, how does that reflect on my belief system? Are my belief system principles are not principles if you don't enforce them at all times? So I think the idea that you don't force someone else to do something else, you focus on your own choices, is also consistent with libertarianism. And that isn't just about Christianity. I mean, in every major faith system, personal choice and making sure that you adhere to a certain set of principles is tantamount.
Yeah, and that's why Christian, I think you once told me you believed that as a Christian, the only political system that was coherent with Christianity was a libertarian philosophy, was it not?
Yeah, like, I'm not one of those people, Jesus was a libertarian, where everybody tries to force Jesus into their political party. I don't think that it's that case at all. It is, you know, if you are a Republican and you're voting for candidates that have terrible foreign policies that bring murder and destruction to nations, for what reason? That's something that is not consistent with my personal values. And if you're a Democrat, listen, I'm pro-life, and I'm unashamedly pro-life. And
you'll be the first to espouse self-ownership above right. anyone else.
But I also don't have an issue with gay marriage, okay? Because at the end of the day, who am I to tell two people what they can or can't do when it comes to their relationship? What, you know, me trying to get some outcome out of you by preventing you from being together will somehow make a stronger society? A, I don't think it works. And B, I don't think that it's right because it's not my choice. It has nothing to do with me. So, and secondly, most people of faith want to use the government to use it for charitable purposes. A, that's a terrible system of charity. It's inhumane. It doesn't work. And B, it makes the religious systems, the mutual aid societies, the drive to help our communities and personally connect with our fellow man, that wanes in a society of welfare. So I just think all around, I'm not saying that if you're a Christian and you're a Republican or a Democrat that you're a bad person. It's not for me to decide, but
reassess your role of your religion
right.
influencing your voting behavior.
Right. So I just don't want to use the government to force my personal opinions on others.
But Islam is an issue.
No, I was just going to say I totally agree.
Yeah. I think if you're an atheist, if you're and this is the thing about libertarianism that is so great. It's that if you're an atheist or if you're Muslim, if you're Christian, we can just agree just to leave each other alone. And we're not trying to force some sort of fake battle.
I think we also have to get the government out of religion altogether in order to make that work. And to that extent, I think that some of the tax breaks that they get need to be readdressed.
Well, if we're talking about the taxes, the whole tax system.
Yeah.
Taxes are right. theft.
The entire like,
maybe
tax
by the time we get rid of the
addressed.
Income tax, we don't need to tax churches because other stuff won't be taxed.
The more income that people of faith have, the more that they're going to donate back to their communities, the more charities will be started. So,
it's true.
You know, I think it's the bottom line is when the government is start to – the government – forces people who have differing opinions and morals and values, it pits them against each other. So, all right, well, I disagree with you on gay marriage, so now we have to fight to see how
influence and
control. Yeah, yes. How is the government force going to be used? I need the government force to be for my side as opposed to the other side, and that's something that is, that goes away. People start to live in harmony with each other in a system of libertarianism. So yeah, good times, guys. Good times.
Yeah.
You need like a wacky soundboard spangle.
I do.
You absolutely do.
All right, let's move on to the next question. This comes from Matt.
Yeah, we were doing questions.
That's right.
Didn't Matt have the last question?
I think maybe it was another Matt. Yeah.
I guess this is the Matt Libertarian Matt. Party. There's a lot of Matts.
There's a lot of Matts and Chris's.
Yeah.
So, okay, he writes, been listening to you guys for a couple months and really enjoy the podcast.
Aww.
Okay. What is with all the positive libertarians?
I think it's ever since I got on the show. You know, people have been like, hey, there's this real positive anarchist, and if that anarchist can be positive, then I can be positive.
I think maybe it's just we have a bunch of Canadian listeners. They're like, your mom's a nice lady, eh?
Yeah, are we getting every Canadian libertarian?
Maybe. All four of them.
Are we?
Been listening to
all
you guys.
All of them living in none of it.
Yeah, so one question I would like addressed by anarchist anarcho-capitalists still is... not 100%. Okay, so this person says, A, what is the distinction between anarchist and anarcho-capitalist? Let's hit that out of the park real quick for him. Peffers, what's the distinction between the two, if any? Hold
on. Anarchist is a superset, while anarcho-capitalist is a subset.
Right.
Anarchy, there's a lot of different types of anarchists. There's your anarcho-socialists, there's your... anarcho-capitalists, your voluntarists, your mutualists, your nihilists, and there's a long list.
Right, so anarchist is to Christian as anarcho-capitalist is to Methodist, essentially.
Essentially, yes.
So, one thing
greedy
he wants...
and they hate poor people, is that the association
that's
I was
right.
supposed to make?
Only less divisive.
He wants to talk about private prisons. How can the prison system operate through the free market? I consider myself a libertarian and sometimes entertain the thought of anarchy... But this is one issue I will always get hung up on. So when we're in a state...
But who will cage the men?
That's right. So
that should be the new tagline, not who will build the roads.
Who will cage the men?
That sounds ominous or provocative, depending on how you look at it.
That's true. I will go violate some laws in an anarcho-capitalist society.
Let us all go cage men. W-A-L after dark.
So let's talk about the prison system. It's not just the private prison system, because in a society where there is no state, what would the system of justice look like? If I steal from you, Peffers... How do I get arrested and put in jail, and how do I get punished for my crime of taking your property from you, or worse, in bodily harm or murder? How do you deal with that without the government?
Well, I mean, the big thing is there's a false assumption in there that the only way to deal with a criminal is by locking them up. Which I think has caused our society to be pretty lazy about coming up with actual ways to rehabilitate criminals. So fundamentally, in an anarchist society, you would have to rethink criminal justice as a whole. Because the current system is very clearly not voluntarist.
It's terrible, yeah.
It's not voluntarist, it's not anarcho-capitalist, it's not anarchy anything. And especially with the privatization of prisons, which has just been a kickback for very specific people and of the privileged class.
Yeah, and let's touch on that. I have an enormous problem with the privatization of services, essentially. With the government, when they privatize goods, when they privatize a tollway, when they privatize a parking meter system... they're creating a monopoly, so it's not like it's some sort of free market solution. You know, the Republicans go crazy. They love privatization because we're moving it back to the free market.
Well, even a lot of libertarians enjoy a lot of this privatization.
But it may save money, but it's certainly not the free market because you're basically awarding a 50-year contract to one company, and it's usually a contract with preferred vendors that have good connections.
Right.
It's an electoral mandate.
Like, if Indianapolis just sold the meters to whoever, like, if you wanted to make some extra money, you could rent out a meter.
That's right.
That would be pretty awesome.
We'll do a Kickstarter
or
campaign.
Or get rid of all the meters and not have any meters, and we'll just figure it out. But...
Well, why... I mean, we pay for the streets. We pay for the streets to be maintained. Why can't we park on the streets?
Yeah, I'd say meters are better than, like, paying for that with taxes.
Right. So the privatizing services is bad because then you're turning a profit. I have a friend, and his daughter was sent to a prison for drugs. She took the fall for her boyfriend. She was involved legitimately, but the boyfriend didn't get any jail time, and she did despite his long record and her not having a record. She had very complicated diseases. You know, I won't go into what they were, but they're complicated. They need very specific care. And the prison system here in Indiana, for healthcare purposes, they've privatized that. So there's one company that handles all the healthcare for the Indiana prison system. And this company is public. They must, every quarter, turn a profit for their shareholders. So in that situation, what do they do? Do they raise prices on the state of Indiana? Well, they can't. They have a fixed cost, and they have to work with budgets. And the government is always broke for everything except stupid things like soccer stadiums and cricket stadiums and football stadiums. But
cricket stadiums.
Yeah, we just built a $6 million cricket stadium.
Did we really build a cricket stadium?
$6 million. Called the Greg Ballard Diversity Program.
Yeah. And so
what kind of diversity? For other stuffy white people?
Right.
I hope that was like for crickets. That would be actually less stupid if it was a stadium.
Like
for
if it was
little,
just a cricket farm?
Yeah. I would rather have a stadium full of crickets than a cricket stadium.
So they can't raise money because the government needs it for stupid things. They can't give less to their shareholders because then they'll become a bad investment and who will want to invest in them? So what's the next place that they can make cuts? Providing the services. So what do? They start scaling back their services. And all of a sudden, someone like my friend's daughter, who has a very complicated disease, doesn't get the treatment that she needs. It's not monitored. And she ended up dying in prison with a massive hemorrhage because her complicated disorder was not properly treated. So it becomes a very, very serious issue of civil rights. So then what do you get? Well, then they start suing. And so the taxpayers have to pay out all these settlements. So the privatization of services is terrible because it is inhumane. It doesn't put the life of the person that is receiving the treatment, or they become a profit center. They're no longer a person that needs care. They're no longer a person that needs serviced. They're not customers anymore, even though they're in prison. They're now a profit center.
But the government does it no differently. I mean, for instance, I can imagine a point under the new healthcare regulations where the type of treatment you will receive will be based upon your career and your taxpayer value, how much you will be, you know, how much money you make, how much you'll be contributing towards Social Security, Medicare, other services. You will receive a better type of care, a bigger subsidy, because there's more of a incentive to keep you alive. It's not just a private thing. It is absolutely it's both. You are a profit center for the government, and you're a profit center for the private. Well, this bastardized form of private service delivery.
So now, Peffers, not just prisons, but touch on criminal justice. Tell me how things are going to be better in your society. Hold on. Yeah. Sorry, I had you off for Mike Wrestling.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Mike Wrestling.
You're a Mike Wrestler, my friend.
Am I branding my microphones that aren't mine?
You are. You Wrestler, you.
All right.
Just running off with them.
Right. Yeah, just running off with strange microphones that aren't mine. Anyway, so in an anarcho-capitalist society, the idea is you have to buy your own
government
protection. The law enforcement system is not just something that's taxed and then provided for. And I mean, there's certain models for that, like hiring private security to patrol your neighborhood via neighborhood covenant, or hiring security for gated community or for apartment complex, things like that. But one of the first things you got to look for is if there's a crime being committed, you got to look at the amount of clear and present danger. if there's somebody in your house right now stealing your stuff and you don't know if they're armed or not, then the use of deadly force is probably the best option for you in that scenario.
If you don't know whether they're armed or not?
If you don't know. If they're in your house and they're stealing stuff, then you don't know how dangerous they are. They are a huge variable in that scenario.
So before you know whether or not they're armed, your initial
you don't want to find out
should be to exercise deadly force. How about halt? I have a gun. Put your hands up.
And how long do you think it's going to take for them to react and shoot you? You don't want to find out the hard way.
If you have your gun aimed at them, you are still obligated to say something along the lines.
Not if they're in your
by
household.
By the law of human decency.
No, not if they're in your household.
You spend a lot of time in strange people's houses just breaking in.
We're in a basement. Well,
this podcast.
I mean, what if you have a family?
Do you have to think it makes you a decent human being to say?
Hold on, though. I broke into Spangle's apartment tonight.
You did.
I came in here completely
thinking they were in here.
I came in here thinking that he was in here, him and his wife, because I heard Rick Perry's voice on a political commercial, so I apologize in advance.
And Spangle invited us to come over at a specific time.
He did, but I was in here looking around, and if the lights had been off or if there had been a power outage and they see a strange guy, and I walked clear back there looking
for him. Yeah, he started going through my underwear drawer. It
and
was terrible.
Yes, he does have tie-dye thongs.
Had Spangle not said, who's that?
Yep.
Or, hey...
Yep.
Everybody likes to bring up this argument that it's like it's something new that people don't check what's going on. If you have somebody that is stealing stuff and breaking stuff in your home and you happen to see them, you
brandish a weapon and fire without asking them a question, you are a dick, sir.
Well, I mean, it's a question of is that morally allowable?
Like, were you breaking stuff or visibly stealing things? Or, I mean,
what if he had tripped over this... this chest right here, and it sounded as though he was destroying property or possibly
what if he tripped
it?
And it looked like he was somehow slipping money in his pocket or something? Or
well, you shouldn't just shoot at a sound.
Yeah.
But if they see Greg Lentz in here and he's just breaking and stealing it.
Now, some of our listeners would say shoot on sight.
Right. Oh, absolutely. I just think that it's less than humane.
The thing is, you have a right to exist, and you have if you have a reasonable fear that somebody in your home is armed and willing to use deadly force against you, you have the right to use deadly force.
That person,
in that scenario.
Everything is based on property rights. You own your stuff. And if somebody is coming in to violate your stuff, they are putting themselves in that same danger, only they're choosing to be there. You're not choosing to be in a situation of danger to have someone in your home. But they are making that choice. And
if you
there may be
weapon,
deadly consequences.
Spangle, if you owned a weapon, can you honestly tell me that your first response would be to respond with deadly force and not a verbal what have you, a verbal inquisition of the situation?
I mean, it depends. Like, if Greg is in my apartment again and I had a weapon, dead immediately.
Yes,
but
clearly.
I don't think that Peffers is saying that if you hear a noise, you just start shooting at them. But
that's kind of what Peffers said.
Well, but no, he's
there was at least a sight component to the whole thing.
That's
you
the,
see
the,
them
the purity
committing a bunch of crimes
argument.
In the middle of the night.
I didn't
night
say
in your house.
You see a squirrel silhouette in the window and you just start firing everywhere, you know.
Not totally irresponsibly, but so
I mean, I'd, obviously look at the scenario, but if somebody is clearly robbing you, then you have
But are you saying that your property is worth more than the value of their life as a human
I'm
being?
I'm saying that they pose a significant danger to me to the point where if I take the extra time to warn them of my presence, that I actually put
myself
in
danger.
So
someone who does not even know that you are there
but
is
what happens
to your existence?
But what happens
if they know that I'm there, they're definitely a threat to my existence. And if I say, halt,
how are they,
they know exactly where
I'm
at.
Existence. They're a threat to your property, sir.
They are a threat to my existence because they could very well be armed.
Yeah, they're
many people try
like,
to do
what do you think
a
big,
home
they
invasion
could.
Without...
That's a big clue,
no, it's not a big... Well, it's not a big... Like, would you break into someone's house without something to subdue the owners with? Something
Greg,
that
what
might
were
even
you planning
him?
On beating Spangle with in the event that you found him setting on
even
the sofa?
Even your fists. Like, what if the guy just jumps him and starts beating the hell out of him?
Well, we could argue hypothetical situations all day long, but let's... Well, I think we've fleshed that out for the listener, and they can make up their own minds. Great. But let's go to what happens. Let's say you caught someone stealing your stuff. You see it's the Jones boy down the street... You didn't shoot the Jones boy. he gets away with your television, or you have private security cameras and you see that it's the Jones boy, what do you do?
You use a private security firm. You bring your evidence to the private security firm, and you bring up a suit against him. There's several...
What if the Jones boy does not say that is a valid... They're not bound by that contract. Only you are by that private
security. Exactly, well, I mean, right. And what if the Jones boy just says, sorry, come get me?
The thing is, the thing about private contracts and voluntary interaction is they stop once property's been stolen. Mm-hmm. At the point where your TV's been stolen, you have the right to recover that television. Now, it's going to be a lot easier if you go through some sort of arbitration service or security service instead of try to go in there and grab it yourself, because if you go in there and grab it yourself, you're going to have to prove, you're going to be in the exact same boat trying to prove that you weren't in there trying to steal their stuff.
Right. And here's where anarcho-capitalism breaks down. You, in fact, have to have a mandate that everyone is enrolled in an arbitration service and or private security form or exist outside the law.
No, you don't have to have a mandate. No,
you have the ability to go after it yourself.
Sure, but then you, in fact, are becoming a criminal.
No, you're not becoming a criminal because you're getting your stuff back.
You just have the extra burden of proof.
You're just O.J. Simpson stealing your own stuff back.
But, no, that was after. No, sale.
So what if the Jones boy doesn't buy into your crap and his dad has a pretty hefty security force of his own, and you're just not getting your TV back?
No, sometimes even though you don't get your TV back.
That sort of stuff happens here. What if the Jones boy's dad's chief of police for the town and nothing ever happens to him? Because
I will say, under the current system, I had my iPad stolen last October, November-ish, and I could track it on the Find My iPhone thing. And I knew that it was at 11th in Illinois. I called the police, and they said, sorry about your luck. Have a nice day. And so my stuff just was never recovered under the current system.
You should have just called Maya.
No, I did. Good. That's a whole nother story. Maya and I went over there the next day, but everything was gone. You should have seen the look on these people's face when I opened the door with my armed entourage.
She's your little own Blackwater.
That's right. If anybody needs any problems taken care of, send me a note. We'll take care of it for you. But the police, I begged. I called everyone up to the mayor's office and tried to give them the serial number to get this back. So it under the current system, it just didn't happen. So...
And in a lot of circumstances, if you have property stolen from you, there's just really no way to recover it.
Right.
Just try to keep your more valuable possessions. You know, if you have investments or things like that, you could buy safes. You can get lease spots in a safety deposit box. You can do all sorts of things to protect your possessions.
Again, the Jones boy murders my wife. Okay. And what happens to him then? To me, in my mind, the way that I picture it is a lot like the Wild West. It's a lot like the Hatfield and McCoy movie, where basically the law doesn't have the ability to stop this feud. I mean, we have a reasonable expectation that our police, that our current system, can and should stop murder. Now, obviously, that's a foolish notion because they can't and they don't. But there is legal recourse. If someone murders my wife and we find out who it is, they go into the criminal justice system.
Well,
if that person is the known murderer, what happens to them in your system?
Well, in this system, you know, there's a lot of different options. Again, the clear and present danger aspect applies. Deadly force is not to be used unless if there is clear and present danger, or you're in a situation where you're trying to apprehend them.
Right. So it's not eye for an eye.
No.
And you're not advocating that.
No.
You're saying that they have precedent to, in fact, go that route, but that is not... It's not like the default de facto.
Yeah.
You should just go around shooting anytime you see someone in your house.
Yeah, no, exactly.
So what happens? We have videotape of this kid coming into my home, murdering a member of my family. He escapes, and he's hiding out at his house, which is well armed by another security team.
Okay.
What happens then?
Well, I mean, one of the things is murder is a societal problem, and that it's going to take a lot of years of study in how to apprehend murderers, how to rehabilitate, how how to protect society as a whole. I mean, these things are solved by people thinking and coming up with new systems that treat people better and whatnot. So I'm not going to say that this anarcho-capitalist system is going to solve all our problems.
Sure.
Because we are responsible for solving our own problems.
It doesn't matter what system of government does or does not exist. The impulse to murder will always be there. People will always try to steal things. You know, and we can't eradicate it with more government, and we can't eradicate that problem.
But that's
with
how
less
government arose. The reason government arose was because we existed in the state of nature, and two men formed a coalition. We agree to abide by expectations in exchange. You don't kill me. It created more utility for those two initial individuals.
See, I disagree with that. It absolutely fundamental. I think that government just sprung up as a result of people's excesses. And ever since there has been excesses, there have been people who wish to live off of excesses.
If you and I were the first people in nature, and I said, Dan, I'll tell you what, I don't know you, but I agree to this. I won't kill you if you don't kill me. You just set precedent for the first government in history.
No, that's not government. That is a voluntarist interaction.
No, it isn't. It created the loophole.
It's
that
not a
was
loophole.
The precedent. Oh, yeah, it is.
I think you guys are just disagreeing on the definition of a word. And this argument's just going to go out of control.
How have we incorporated others against their will?
Economies of scale.
Nerd fight.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is that...
By conquest and birth. Subsequent birth. I mean...
No. I'm just saying that scenario where I agree not to kill him and he agrees not to kill me.
We incorporate new people by way of conquest, conquering the areas
I'm saying that's the direction.
And then subsequent birth.
That's the direction it can evolve. Conquest. But how does this...
Has historically, repeatedly.
Well, conquest is something you're okay with as a libertarian?
I just don't think that the sociology is there.
Conquest?
No, sociology. He said, how has this happened? So, and here's the answer of how this has happened historically, repeatedly.
I mean, in the book Guns, Germs, and Steel by Jared Diamond, he goes into the different levels of society. You have bands, which tend to be no more than 40 people. You have tribes, which tend to have a tribal leader, but he leads more by...
It's a societal development of man in history.
The tribe, the one who lead, the tribal leader tends to be a person who has been voluntarily selected. He holds no real power, but everybody follows him because he's generally the wisest. Then you have the chiefdom, where you have a chieftain who requires tribute from several tribes or several divisions or some sort of administrative organization involved in that. But then you have state, which is where that chiefdom evolves into an actual government where taxes are levied and used to pay for public works. So government starts more around that chiefdom phase.
Oh, yeah.
And the tribal phase and the band phase is where
I'm talking
people
about the door.
Are very egalitarian in the sense that all of them have equal rights.
I want to, because we got to finish up.
Okay.
So... Tell me,
so
what does the prison system look like in your universe?
Well,
right, the question you were asked, not the question you wish you were asked.
All right,
damn,
so.
Leadership training, you added yourself right there. Threw yourself under the bus, Peppers.
Anyway, so we get to this kid murders somebody's wife. Now, if the guy is able to provide adequate defense for himself, obviously he's not getting taken down. But as would happen in our current system.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that tends to be political actual force.
If he had enough money and the right lawyers, then he could get off.
Yes.
Right.
But in a circumstance where he couldn't protect himself from local law enforcement, you can use local law enforcement to apprehend him, place him in temporary holding. At that point, you would have a public trial... That is paid for by the plaintiff.
But what if he doesn't recognize your authority? He operates outside the system and says, no, I in fact do not recognize
your
security force.
He used violent force, and therefore he
can be excommunicated.
Did he violate the social contract, Peppers?
There's no such thing as a social contract.
You like excommunication. I understand that. That is not, though, remediation.
One of the big things...
Exile murders.
So what does your prison system look like? We've covered what it doesn't, but what does your prison system look like?
If I can finish a sentence here once in a while.
I don't talk to
you. You've got him in temporary holding. You've got the trial is presumably public. You have a ruling, and you've got guilty, not guilty, not guilty by reason of insanity. Those are the three major options. You got guilty. Generally, I would say restitution is paid in those regards. You'd have to determine the value of someone lost, which is always a very tricky thing to hammer down, and we're going to have lawyers arguing about that for forever. And then you've got not guilty by reason of insanity, which means that they have some sort... At that point, you're treating their violent behavior like an illness, that they are always going to commit violent acts. They have before. They will continue to do so. And therefore, you bring their rationality into question. And as a lot of our listeners will know, if you're not rational, you aren't self-owning.
So who presides? Not the state-appointed or elected judge. Who presides over this proceeding?
It's going to be a private court system.
Mistrial, I declare a change of venue. I do not subscribe to the laws that you, in fact, pay to prevent give you your justice. What do you do now?
I mean, you could probably you could use arbitrators.
What if I don't subscribe to anyone? I don't want to pay anyone. I don't recognize anybody's authority over me or anybody's state.
If the evidence is compelling enough that that you did in fact commit a violent crime, then your opinion is of no concern.
But I don't subscribe to the laws and
right.
the contract.
I'm not going voluntarily enter into your contract.
I exist outside the law. Now what?
No, the thing is, though, it's based off of the principle of self-ownership and the principle...
But I own my actions. It's mm-hmm. yours and your philosophies that I'm not a big fan of.
I might believe differently. I might be a agorist who does not believe in any private contracted firms.
I mean, that doesn't mean that private contracts don't exist in an anarcho-capitalist society.
They do, but I've chosen. I'm an agorist. I exist outside your system, and I, in fact, go into your system.
So a magical elf that is immune to all my world's laws appears in my world. What do I do? Well, nothing, obviously.
Well, no. But you have presented two problems. If you have an anarcho-capitalist society, one, everybody has to be capitalist. That could present some issues. What if there was a communal state? What if there's a communal collective gathering of individuals? You have to force capitalism on them.
No,
second,
they would be interpreted in a capitalist sense. They might not interpret themselves as such, but as long as they did not aggress against someone else, they could interpret themselves however, and the capitalists surrounding them would interpret it as some sort of voluntary commune that they hold title to.
You know what, Greg? Collective. This is untenable.
Yeah.
This is not working for us. This is not good for society. It's starting to harm our businesses because people think that we are a lawless, godless, murdering city. We need to do something about this. Let's start monopolizing the force, and everyone who lives in our city must obey the city government.
And hence the rise of the state.
Right.
The military state.
I mean, in a lot of circumstances, you're going to have cities that are more planned cities. One venture capitalist buys up a bunch of land, builds a city, people can buy shares into that company, and they could become residents through that manner.
Like Belle Isle up in Detroit that they're kind of working on right now.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, that is one of the forms that you could install a privatized security force
in today's society, you agree to adhere to societal standards and have a contract, in fact, with the state.
I get the feeling that we are going to get letters on this particular segment, and we will probably open with this the next time. So let's wrap up. Let's move on to our soapbox. Let's get up on our soapbox and talk about anything that you'd like to talk about that you missed, that you didn't get a chance to mention, that you'd like to promote. Dan Peffers.
Any hate mail can be forwarded to my Twitter handle @DanielPeffers.
Spell that for the people.
It is spelled at symbol Delta Alpha November India Echo Lima Papa Echo Foxtrot Foxtrot Echo Romeo Sierra.
All right.
You know how many libertarians you just endeared yourself to?
I know. You give them a Morse code boner. All right. Greg.
Hey, I am sorry if I was hard on you. I have never had the chance to debate an anarcho-capitalist for the...
Without one shouting at you?
No. I've always wanted to because I see some serious gaping flaws. And to me, the anarcho-capitalist society or the voluntarist society resembles Thomas Hobbes' Leviathan before man agrees to the social contract. He created all of social contract theory.
Well, so, I'm not going to say that these problems don't exist where the state won't just spontaneously form in places, but the thing is, theft spontaneously forms in places, and yet we still have a concept of private property that we defend.
We absolutely do, but we have a system of remediation that everyone is bound to, and I think whether you call
everyone?
It a mandate... Huh?
Everyone?
Everyone in the United States.
O.J. Simpson was bound to it.
He got out on technicality. And
I actually agree with Peppers, though.
No, his jury let him out. We created a system where your peers get to determine your guilt.
Who's just we? My name's not on any of the paperwork.
Well, then feel free to leave, Spooner.
Greg is kind of a you step on my toe, I annihilate your
ouch.
Kind of Republican.
I'm
moving to the Northwest Territories.
I see, like, what happened tonight. I see a lot of what the founders wrestled with when they were trying to determine the right systems of government.
Right.
Is that if you are able to opt out, you will create a haven for irrational actors to come in and violate the laws you adhere to. And remediation exists. We can choose to deny it, or we can choose to accept it and do our best to deal with it.
But do we do it based on the right grounds? I would say we don't. Because, you know, if we had prisons full of murderers and rapists and pedophiles...
Not pot users.
Right.
Right. Or, you know, traffic violators.
Or even, like, heroin users. Or, yeah, traffic violators.
I mean...
Final thoughts?
Just, I appreciate you... engaging.
Vinatieri just edged the goal in.
Really, I thought that this would be like something that, you know, most anarchists.
And
three times I've tried.
Doing well.
One Peppers at a time.
Three times I've tried.
But I have Chris Johnson on my fantasy team, and he's got two touchdowns so far.
One of the things is you got to bear in mind, I'm fairly new to this.
You can't expect these guys to see a ball.
All right. That was five people talking at once.
Right. They were just having a private conversation with their microphones out.
It was Greg Lentz's turn to do his soapbox.
That's right.
Good. Well, I noticed you jumped in on that.
All right.
We were conversing.
Chris Peffers, any final thing to promote?
Raising Hope this Friday, our premiere.
All right.
Everyone watch it.
Gina Bear?
I would just suggest that everybody go, you know, investigate more of what we said. Do your own investigation. Make up your own mind. Exercise your free will and thought, which almost everybody agrees with.
Yes, listen to Gina.
I would like to...
Or don't. You can totally tune out next week. I won't give a f***, but I'll tell you what. I'll be the one sitting on the sofa when you'll be sitting behind a keyboard.
You've got a lot of editing to do, Spangle.
I know. Oh. It's okay, though. I love having back. Really? Really? I would like to... I really don't have anything to promote. I'm sure I do, but I just don't... I just, you know... I'm good. All right, so thanks for listening to this episode of We Are Libertarians. This has been quite an episode. Another five-person episode. Like episode 100, but this one, though, didn't end in screaming and crying and Facebook posts where we all hate each other afterwards.
Not a single tear was shed.
So, more successful, but next time...
We promise to do better next time.
Right.
Music for We Are Libertarians is provided by Hoosier musician Brian Keith Wallen. Please check out his website, briankeithwallen.com. The song is Bad Spell.